And then Monday, which is a holiday, I guess it's Washington's birthday or President's Day, maybe both. Partly sunny with a high near 42. So that's on Monday. I know you all, number of people are kind of taking a 3-day weekend. So hey, good to be with you here. You're listening to the Wild Clearwater Country Show. I would like to remind everyone that the views expressed on the Wild Clearwater Country Show are not necessarily those of KRFP Moscow or any other organization. And so with that out of the way, like I said, we're going to jump into our guest here, Ashley Lipscomb, co-leader of the Palouse Broadband of the Great Old Broads for Wilderness. Ashley, how are you today?
I am doing wonderful. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, all things considered. You and I both have been active on a number of issues, both with Friends of the Clearwater and the Palouse Great Old Broads for Wilderness. And so thank you for taking time out of your day to be here.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to talking about all of the issues. Yeah, we have.
There's no shortage of them, right?
No, there isn't.
There is no shortage of them. But let's take a short music break, huh? I got some Levon Helm all queued up. Something about Wide River to Cross.
He's one of my favorites.
Don't touch that dial. KRFP, Moscow.
There's a sorrow in the wind blowing down the road I've been. I can hear it cry while shadows steal the sun. But I cannot look back now. I've come too far to turn around. There's still a race ahead that I must run. I'm only halfway home. I've got to journey on to where I'll find the thing I've lost. I have stumbled, I have strayed. You can trace the tracks I've made all across the memories my heart recalls. But I'm still a refugee. Won't you say sometimes even the strongest soldier falls. I'm only halfway home. I've got to journey on to where I'll find the thing I've lost. A wider river I've got a wide river to cross. I've got a wide river to cross.
And welcome back to the Wild Clearwater Country Show. That was some Levon Helm and a Wide River to Cross. And today's guest is Ashley Lipscomb, co-leader of the Plouse Broadband of the Great Elk Broads for Wilderness. Ashley, what the heck's going on?
Oh, not a whole lot other than lots of wildland issues to keep me busy.
Before we nosedive or backflip into all these issues that the Broads and Friends of the Clearwater and other groups are working on, what's the mission of the Great Elk Broads for Wilderness? Let's start there.
So the Great Elk Broads for Wilderness is a nonprofit national organization that uses the voices and activism of the elderly to promote and protect wildlands and wild places across the United States.
Now, before you were anointed a co-leader of a chapter, did you have to memorize that front words and backwards? Like, is there a broadband initiative?
They didn't let me leave boot camp until I got it right.
So tell us about, I laugh in a very good way because the Broads, I think, are very creative. Tell us about Broads Boot Camp.
Oh, well, it is a 4-day intense learning experience where you learn how to deal with the media, for example. Learn how to work with the Forest Service, for example, to get service projects for the Broads to participate in. Oh, what else? And just bonding with other broadband leaders.
Okay. Now, my understanding is that you went down to Durango, Colorado for your Broad boot camp. Is that right?
Well, I actually got to hang out in near Cortez, Colorado, actually, and stayed in a beautiful bed and breakfast near some wonderful old monuments.
Yes,
that's
yes.
Very typical of that region.
Right there, kind of on the edge of the Colorado Plateau. Now,
yeah.
So let's explain to our listeners how the Great Elk Broads for Wilderness function. The national office is in Durango, Colorado. Is that right?
Correct.
And then, so what is a broadband?
So a broadband is basically a group of primarily older ladies, and younger ladies too, like myself,
mm-hmm.
and even gentlemen like yourself, Brett.
Yeah.
And we, in our particular regions, focus on issues that are affecting public lands near us or affecting state lands. And we basically, sometimes we use humor.
Yes.
Sometimes we use, just our own personal experiences to fight for those particular places. So
yeah.
There's a bunch of groups all over the United States that are doing the exact same thing that we're doing here, fighting for our wild places.
Mm. Okay, so now the Palouse Broadbands, how many participants how many participants are within that chapter, and what's your range? I mean, do you guys go from the Canadian border down to the Salmon River?
Mm-hmm.
It's more than just the Palouse right now, right?
It's pretty large. We would love to see a Coeur d'Alene broadband grow.
Maybe a Sandpoint, a Lake Coeur d'Alene broadband.
Yeah, I know they're hiding up there.
What are they waiting for, right?
What are they waiting now, for?
Or how about one in Missoula? Is there a broadband in Missoula?
I know that they want to try to start one in Hamilton, which is close to Missoula.
Okay.
There's also one in Bozeman as well. So there's some
there
ladies.
There is, right. I've met some of the
ladies.
Women.
Mm-hmm.
Boise broadband. Let's talk about the Boise broadband. I've had a chance to meet a few of those fantastic broads. How's that chapter doing?
You know what? I love that chapter because they have an independent spirit. They know the issues that are going on. Mm. They meet regularly to talk about where those issues are at in their area. Mm. They don't have an official leader right now.
Okay.
But I still think they're very effective and they show up to lots of important meetings that maybe Idaho Fish and Game has you know, things of that nature. So they're active. They really are. Great group.
Great group. Now, so we got the Palouse broadbands here. Who's your partner in crime?
I got to give a shout out to my Cindy girl. She is my partner in crime, and we have meetings all the time trying to figure out how to make this work.
Now, is girl the last name of Cindy, or
no.
Does she? What is Cindy's full name?
Cindy Magnuson.
Okay.
Cindy Magnuson.
So Cindy Magnuson and you are co-leaders of the Palouse Broadband of the Great Old Broads for Wilderness, and we've established that the national office is housed, headquartered down in Durango, Colorado. Do you know, are there broadbands east of the Mississippi River, or is this just a Western thing?
You know, we're primarily in the West, but hey, we've got some ladies out in Florida.
Oh, okay.
Yep, as far as Florida. So they are out there. They're on the East Coast. They're there.
Is there an Alaskan broadband? Do you know? I've never heard of it mentioned.
Well, you know, I could look on the Great Old Broads for Wilderness website if I wanted to know where all of the locations were of our broadbands.
We could do that during a music break, maybe. See if
totally.
See where some of the other broadbands are. Okay, Palouse Broads, let's talk about some of the issues and or events that you all are working on.
All right, so I guess I'll touch on the issues first. Does
sure.
that sound good?
Oh, please go ahead.
So we're dealing with the Upper Lauksaw Land Exchange. We're very vocal about opposing the Clearwater Basin Collaborative. We had a campaign to try to get wilderness designation for Wetus Roadless Area. Let's see. We attended a lot of public hearings this past month, dealing with the Army Corps of Engineers and telling them that they don't need to dredge the Clearwater. You know, we showed up at Highway 95 realignment public hearing.
Yes.
And we also have made appearances at wolf rallies, and we've also shown up at coal train hearings in Spokane, Washington, to talk about that huge, huge undertaking from the Powder River Basin all the way up to the West Coast in Washington.
So it's really so the Broads really cast a wide net.
It's hard to choose which. Which issue to tackle.
Well, and that's the problem. We live in such a corrupt society that there's no shortage of things to fight for.
There isn't.
A lot of social and environmental justice issues out there. Now, speaking of justice, the Boise Broads hosted a few people, including myself. Pretty much they put us, gave us a place to sleep. For the Idaho Rivers United versus the United States Forest Service recent lawsuit. Do you want to tell our listeners about what that lawsuit was about, how the Broads have been involved with it, and what'd you think of the recent ruling?
Oh, boy, that's a three-part question. Okay. You'll have to help me along here. The Broads have been involved with the megalode issue along Highway 12, really, you know, since the beginning. And a lot of our ladies have monitored on that highway, and a lot of them have shown up to other court hearings that have happened concerning this issue. And so just the next phase was heading down to Boise last week and sitting in federal court and listening to Advocates for the West, you know, advocate for protecting, you know, the Locksaw and rivers that have wild and scenic designation. So we...
How many broads were in that courtroom? I counted a handful.
I think there was at least 10 or 11. Wow. And I got to tell you, I don't even know all the Boise broads, so I'm sure there was some in there that I didn't even know about. So we had a great showing. And so, let's see. I guess when I went into the courtroom, I really wanted to just hear that judge say, no megalodes on Highway 12, you know, and solve all of our problems. But federal court doesn't work that way. Sometimes, you know, a judge can't make a holistic decision, but he can make tiny decisions that help our cause. And so that's what happened in federal court the other day. The judge couldn't say no to megalodes, but he could say, hey, U.S. Forest Service, you have jurisdiction over what happens around the Locksaw, around a wild and scenic river. So, you know, while the Idaho Transportation Department and the Federal Highway Administration are, you know, creating huge tunnels for huge megalodes to go down Highway 12, you know, the Forest Service said, hey, we have no jurisdiction over that. You know, we're going to have to let them do what they want to do. Well, Laird Lucas stepped up and said, hey, you know, these guys have are obligated to protect wild and scenic rivers. So they do have the opportunity to tell these transportation guys, hey, we don't really like what you're doing. We don't feel it aligns with how we are supposed to manage these wild and scenic rivers. So, you know, the judge, Judge Windmill, said, hey, the Forest Service does have jurisdiction. Say something next time. If they don't say something next time, you betcha we're coming after them.
Wow. Wow. Well, that was a very good summary.
It's complicated.
Well, you put it in common terms, and I appreciate that, because this stuff is complicated, particularly when you're dealing with attorneys and legal decisions. I mean, this whole, you know, so federal Judge Windmill issued an 18-page decision. And so in about 2 minutes, you just summed up that 18-page decision, okay?
I tried.
So I applaud you. So there you go. Federal Judge Windmill ruled in 18 pages worth of documentation that the Forest Service acted unlawfully for not enforcing the U.S. 12 easement. And so that U.S. 12 easement is an agreement between the United States Forest Service and the Idaho Transportation Department. And that easement contains language that dictates or that demands that the Idaho Transportation Department, while this easement grants them a certain amount of responsibility or privileges, that they must maintain the aesthetics and natural qualities of the river corridor. And so Laird Lucas, I thought, did a really good job with Advocates for the West, the lead attorney for Advocates, in arguing that the Forest Service does have jurisdiction. And that's really what this ruling established. Could there be megalodes going up U.S. 12 2 months from now? Yes, there could be. However, a federal judge now just told the Forest Service that they do have authority to weigh in on the decision. And so, you know, before you can run, you got to walk. Before you walk, you got to crawl. And so this allows the Forest Service to take some steps. And so I got an email the other day, and it was so funny, because the whole thing is just like you said, common sense goes out the window with a lot of wildland politicking. Mm-hmm. And decision making. But I got an email from someone in the community that says, "Hey, Brett, we're really excited to hear that Judge Windmill ruled that the Forest Service has jurisdiction over their own lands." I mean, you know, it's like, yeah, no kidding. It's amazing that it took 3 years and multiple court battles and everything else under the sun. You know, we threw everything but the kitchen sink to try and stop these megalodes. And now finally we get a ruling that says just that. Yeah, Forest Service, you actually can make decisions involving your own lands.
I mean, isn't that freeing?
Yeah, it was freeing. I don't know. I took it like, I was just, the whole thing is just kind of just crazy. You know, I mean, there's so much common sense involved and yet there isn't. And so that was a big ruling. That was great. And again, so a big shout out to who was it? Was it Diane? Is it Diane Jones with the Boise Broads that put us up?
Diane Jones put us up in a beautiful home, and we appreciate her helping us out. Definitely. Mm.
And who was the other? Who was the other really neat Boise Broad member that we got a chance to meet? We had lunch with her.
Her name was Judy Outerkirk.
First time I met Judy.
Is Judy Outerkirk.
Is Judy. Judy,
I talk
great.
About Judy all the time, too.
Now, you went to boot camp with Judy, didn't you?
Judy was my roommate.
Wow. Judy was your roommate. Okay.
Judy was my
roommate. So big shouts out to the Boise Broads. And, of course, the Palouse Broads, the U.S. 12 ruling against the Forest Service. We've covered that. You want to take a quick music break here?
How about some more Levon Helm?
We'll play some more Levon Helm. And then I'm interested in speaking with you about the recent Idaho Fish and Game appointee that was rejected. And her name is Joan Herlock. And so I want to get your opinion on this rejection by the Idaho legislature.
Because you know I have an opinion on this.
I know you're fired up. I know a lot of people fired up. Sexism is alive and well here in the Gem State. And so we want to talk about that here. All right, let's take a quick music break. You're listening to the Wild Clearwater Country Show, KRFP Moscow.
I'm sure my false heart is
And welcome back to the Wild Clearwater Country Show. Today's guest is Ashley Lipscomb of the Palouse Broadbands of the Great All Broads for Wilderness. And as we got ready to play a song there, you know, I said sexism is alive and well here in the Gem State. Now, that's for you to determine, you the individual to determine. Based on the information that I've gathered and based on just my experiences that I've had here, particularly with Idaho Fish and Game, I feel that sexism, you know, could, or biasness, gender biasness, could have played into this recent news here. Governor Butch Otter's Fish and Game appointee rejected. Joan Herlock's opponents in Idaho Senate say she doesn't have a passion for hunting and fishing. So here's a little background here. Idaho State Senators Monday rejected a gubernatorial appointment for the first time in decades, booting a Buell Fitness Center owner from the Fish and Game Commission just 7 months after Governor Otter named her to the post. The Senate voted 19-16 against Joan Herlock, citing concerns over her hunting and fishing experience that some said left her ill-prepared to set policy governing Idaho's wildlife on the 7-member commission. Goes on to say here that Herlock, however, has held hunting and fishing licenses since she moved to Idaho 15 years ago. Also goes on to say here that she was recommended unanimously by an 8-member panel appointed by Governor Otter to vet candidates this year. And but nonetheless, the Idaho Senate voted her down 19-16. And so the reason why I say sexism is alive and well in the Gem State, and that is my opinion, is when I attended an Idaho Fish and Game Commissioners meeting, it was about a year ago, and ironically, it was a big hearing concerning wolf management, I think in 2011, 2012. And so the commission was trying to establish some new policies and regulations, or lack thereof, when it comes to wolf whacking. And so the place was packed. And probably good 85-90% of the comments came out in favor of at least affording wolves some sort of protection in the state. And disagreeing with this, really just this killing floor. And so further irony there is that there was a number of Boise broads that were there and that testified that day. Now, I remember getting up and standing there and just looking at all of the commissioners. And part of my testimony was, is that, well, you know, the status quo, or the good old boy club of Idaho, is alive and well. I mean, all of these commissioners were white. All of them were over the age of 50. All of them were avid, you know, fishers, and they like to fish and hunt. But they're also all political appointees. And so I just noticed while I was giving my testimony, there was no non-whites there. There were no females present. There were no one that were appointed to the Idaho Fish and Game Commission that aren't avid hunters or fishermen or fishing women, but you know, you can still value wildness. You can still value fish and wildlife on lands and in rivers, and not necessarily, you know, want to go out and hunt them or catch them on a hook. And so it's just this whole dominating paradigm that exists within the Idaho Fish and Game Commission. At least in my perspective, I think sexism was a part in the fact that she was rejected, and the fact that, I don't know, is there a connection between the fact that she was a woman, but she also wasn't an avid hunter or fisherman or fisherwoman? I mean, Ashley, what do you think?
Well, you know, they basically claim that she just doesn't get it, and she's not going to get it, and she's not going to be able to, you know, apply the appropriate policy to fish and game, which is, you know, which is probably not true. And the reason why it's not true is because I have a quote right here. Okay. It was the last part of this article, and it says they want, and this is her speaking, Herlock speaking, they want to hear the answer that we should be able to kill wolves all the time and in any way. I would hope you would want a commissioner who is going to comply with the law. And we're talking about federal law. So she gets it. She gets that it's not about good old boy ideologies that are running Idaho Fish and Game. Mm. She gets the fact that it's about following federal law when managing wolves rather than adopting a more ideological approach. Mm. So she gets it. She may not be out there, you know, with her hook and bait, but she gets the fact that it's not all about what Idaho wants. Mm. It's about what, you know, is good for the whole ecosystem, which transcends state lines.
Mm. Well, that's very interesting. So, you know, and I'm not going to back down from my statement, but maybe it's a little bit less to do with gender equality or inequality and more of the fact that these commissioners looked at her as a challenge to the status quo and or the current paradigm which dominates Idaho Fish and Game.
They're scared of a woman who thinks for herself. And that's scary.
Well, I mean, I live with one and I can relate to that, but still, I understand your point, you know? I mean, so maybe, so, well,
there is a little sexism. There is a little sexism, but I think there's a lot of she doesn't agree with how we think and she's going to cause problems.
Yeah, and I think maybe some of the reasons why I draw the conclusions that I do is that there has been other instances in the Gem State here where sexism actually has surfaced, such as the firing of the former head of the Idaho Transportation Department. She won like a multi-million-dollar settlement against the Idaho Transportation Department. I think one of the quotes said is that there's no way a woman can run this. There's no way a woman is capable of raising a family and running a department. I mean, it was something along those lines, but there have been a number of instances, that being one of the ones that pops in my mind, where sexism or gender inequality rose to the surface in terms of a strong female leadership being placed in an important decision-making body.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. So are you going to write a letter to the editor here? I mean, I've been getting emails from women, and I hope we see some men out there that kind of consider writing a letter to the editor or writing a letter to the Idaho Fish and Game Commission expressing disappointment with their decision here.
Actually, and we probably should be writing our senators, because the senators are the ones that gave her the axe.
Well, that's a very good point. Now, kudos to Moscow, the Moscow representative here in
Dan
the Senate,
Schmidt.
Dan Schmidt. I know Dan voted in favor of her being appointed to the commission, and I'm not surprised to hear that. But nonetheless, I just had to bring that up here. And again, so Joan Herlock, Idaho Fish and Game, recently appointee rejected. Whether it has to do with the fact that she's a strong female. A strong female leader, and or maybe it's a combination. The fact that she's a strong female leader, and like you said, she thinks independently, and those thoughts challenge the status quo and or the paradigm, whereas, you know, the only good wildlife is one that you can see through a gun or that's hanging off a hook. So, I mean, that's just the way it is. Idaho Fish and Game, they hang themselves, you know? And I am aware that this story is being picked up outside of the state.
Great.
Idaho is just great at punching itself in the eye. They're just great at it. They do it just about every week, multiple times. Just read the newspaper. I don't know how we got the nickname Gem State, but boy, oh boy, it stuck. So, okay. So today's guest is Ashley Lipscomb with the Plouse Broadbands of the Great Old Broads for Wilderness. Ashley, let's talk about a broad walk, a Great Old Broads broad walk. What exactly is a broad walk? We've talked about a broad boot camp. We've talked about a broad band. Now, a broad walk.
So a broad walk is a national event, and it seeks to put the spotlight on places that need protection in the United States. For example, in our area, we just had the Wheatus is Wilderness Broadwalk this past summer. And basically, you know, we want to see this this roadless area become wilderness because it's great low elevation habitat in the winter. It has historical value, not only for the Lewis and Clark story, but also for the Nez Perce people. So there's many places all across the United States that deserve protection, and a broadwalk is just one way to gain attention for these important areas.
So what now, in terms of a broadwalk for 2013, just like that last year, boy, we had like 30 plus broads turn out for the Wheatus is Wilderness Broadwalk. Where were some of those broads from?
Oh, we had some from far away as New Mexico, all the way out to Washington and Oregon, over to Montana,
Colorado.
Colorado. We had a lot of Western ladies from all over.
Yeah, and
coming out.
That's right. We had Montana. We had Washington.
I believe we even had Nevada.
I think we did have Nevada. Colorado, New Mexico. I don't think anyone came up from California. Of course, a bunch of women from Idaho.
Yep.
But it was a smashing success. Is there a broadwalk going out on the Olympic Peninsula this year?
I was going to put a plug in for that, but you have already beat me to the punch. Let's see. So September 5th and ending on the 10th, I believe, the Wild Olympic Broadwalk is going to be happening out west. And it's as close as you can get to the next broadwalk if you live up here in Idaho. So Shelley Spalding, the leader out there, is putting on the Wild Olympics broadwalk. And I know she is very concerned about road right sizing on national forest. So that's her big issue. And I'm assuming that they're going to be talking a lot about that.
I don't know too much about that. I do know some about the Olympic Peninsula, and it is one of my favorite spots in the lower 48. It is it's a wildland wonderland, and you got the Olympic National Park out there, and I know you got some roadless country out there, and just an incredibly dynamic ecosystem. Hopefully some wolves will recover as wolf populations recover across the state of Washington. I know getting out there to the Olympic Peninsula is a challenge, mostly just because of the big interstates, you know, and all the development and whatnot along the west side there. So Great Old Broads for Wilderness, www.greatoldbroads.org. The Great Old Broads for Wilderness is a national organization that uses the voices and activisms of elders to preserve and protect wilderness and wildlands. With more than 4,500 members and supporters, the Broads represents and gives voice to the millions of older Americans who want to see their public lands protected for future generations. Now, do you have to be a female? Do you have to be old, and do you have to be like a total wilderness nut to be part of the Great Old Broads for Wilderness?
You can be old, you can be young, you can be male, you can be female, you can be none of those things. You probably, I'm sure I'm missing.
No, that's right. And so what are some of the other issues? The Broads do a lot of work on off-road vehicle monitoring, right? I mean, you folks don't just work on wilderness proposals. I know you work on a lot of, is there something going on down there in the Greater Canyonlands, proposal for a national monument around the Greater Canyonlands, Canyonlands National Park?
Yeah, I know that is a push from the national office, they want to make the Canyonlands a national monument and try to get rid of that OHV use that runs rampant down there.
It's pretty bad.
I want to make sure I say it right. Cryptobiotic
soils. Nice
yes,
job. Nice
that
job.
Take hundreds of years to produce, and it's incredibly fragile ecosystem, and you got four-wheelers having their way with the land.
Yeah.
So, you know, that'd be a great thing to look up on the Great Old Broad's website, too, checking out that that campaign that's going on right now. And actually, I feel like they're being very successful at, you know, at getting that campaign, that, you know, the national attention that it needs.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Now, speaking of national attention, I think the Great Old Broads for Wilderness were recently in the High Country News. And unfortunately, for a bad reason, not that the Broads did anything, but it had to do with can you tell our listeners about why the Great Old Broads for Wilderness were in the High Country News?
Well, apparently San Juan County doesn't really like the Great Old Broads for Wilderness because, you know, they're looking to protect land more than destroy it. And so our ladies were participating in a national broad walk.
This is in Utah, right? San Juan County's in Utah, right? Southern Utah. Okay.
We had ladies staying on private land. I believe they were staying on Nature Conservancy land.
Okay.
And it was a fenced area. And one of the ladies had to leave the broad walk early. And upon coming to the gate, the gate was locked and it had this kind of, I don't know, an effigy of an old haggard looking woman. It was kind of like a Halloween mask, you know, and there was some kind of note attached to the locked gate that we don't want Great Old Broads in our territory. So it kind of posed on one hand a safety concern because if, you know, there's an emergency and ladies can't get out,
so someone put a padlock on the gate.
Yeah, they locked them in.
Y'all didn't have a key, obviously.
Somebody threw away the key, apparently. But so they got locked in. But, you know, the great thing about that story is the national office took it in stride. And instead of, you know, taking this complete we're outraged kind of thing, kind of turned it into a humorous story and, you know, blew it off as, you know, sometimes this kind of stuff happens to us in San Juan County.
And so y'all got a spread in the High Country News because of it.
Yeah, because somebody decided that they wanted to lock some little old ladies.
It's unbelievable. And, I could see this happening in like Idaho County. I could see this happening in Idaho County to Friends of the Clearwater.
Yeah.
The only thing is that we're backcountry. You know, we get out into the backcountry a lot. So for the most part, we're not going to be like in some sort of private land or public campground situation where there's a gate. But that was really something. So what this tells me is that the Great Old Broads for Wilderness are making a difference. Because when you stir the pot, you get results. whether it's positive legislation or being locked inside a campground and you can't get out. So kudos for the Great Old Broads for Wilderness. How about y'all got a new executive director? Is that right?
We do have a new executive director. Her name is Shelley Silbert, and she I think was living in Durango even before she became the executive director. She was the associate director of the San Juan Citizens Alliance before coming to the Great Old Broads. And also she was at Northern Arizona University for a while, old stomping grounds.
Can we get a whoop?
Yeah, and she was the director of strategic environmental initiatives. So she has over 20 years of experience in the conservation realm. And I know that Ronnie Egan, our former executive director, is still going to be around a little bit. And so we're looking forward to seeing what Shelly can do for the Great Old Broads. And I'm sure she can and will do a lot of good stuff for us.
Now, Rose Chilcote is still at the office, right? She's
still there.
The associate director or the VP, so to speak.
Yeah, kind of like the VP.
Love Rose. Definitely miss Ronnie.
But she's still going to be around.
I know Ronnie's going to be around. Love Ronnie. She's active on our Facebook page. We appreciate the support.
Mm-hmm.
We're starting to run out of time here. Let's plug the Great Old Broads for Wilderness one more time. Ashley, how do people learn more about the national chapter and or get involved with the local Palouse broadband?
The best way to do it is through our website, greatoldbroads.org, and you can look for local chapters on their website. And actually, my contact information is on that website. And so we can get you hooked up and tell you more about what we're doing in wild Clearwater country and here on the Palouse.
Ashley, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to be here. That flew by, didn't it?
It's always fast. It's always fun.
I know. I wish the rest of my day went this fast. So again, hey, www.greatoldbroads.org. You don't have to be great. You don't have to be old. You don't have to be a broad, but you do have to be broad-minded. Isn't that the saying or something?
Yeah.
You got to be broad-minded.
Yeah. And yeah. Also, let me just plug another way to learn about the Palouse chapter of the Great Old Broads for Wilderness. March 21st, 2013, we're going to be having our spring meeting at the 1912 Center. Uh-huh. And so come on out. We always have good food. We're going to be talking about what we're going to be doing in the spring and the summer. And we're also going to be showing the Rachel Carson documentary I believe it's called A Sense of Wonder.
Oh, wow.
So
this is great. Repeat. Say that date one more time.
So March 21st, 2013. Be on the lookout for it because we have some great, great things to share and some great events coming up.
Ashley, thanks so much. You have a great night.
You too.
And I'll be seeing you sooner than later.
All right. Sounds good.
All right, there we go. Ashley Lipscomb, co-leader of the Palouse Broadbands for the Great Old Broads for Wilderness. And we'll just take a short music break, and when we come back, we'll talk to you about a couple time-sensitive public comment opportunities before we get booted off the air at 5 o'clock. Don't touch that dial. KRFP, Moscow.
Poor old dirt farmer, he's lost all his corn. And now where's the money to pay off his loan? He lost all his corn, can't pay off his loan. He lost all his corn. Well, the poor old dirt farmer, he only grows stone. Must feel
And welcome back to the Wild Clearwater Country Show. You're listening to KRFP Moscow. Again, to learn more about how to become involved with the Great Old Broads for Wilderness, www.greatoldbroads.org. I want to, again, thank Ashley Lipscomb, co-leader of the Plouse Broadbands of the Great Old Broads for Wilderness, a great local chapter to get involved with. And one of the best things I can say about the group is that they're effective and they do it with personality. So that's always appreciated, especially in the all-too-serious world of wildland politics. But again, www.greatoldbroads.org. You don't have to be great. You don't have to be old. You don't even have to be a broad, but you do have to be broad-minded. In other words, you have to have an open mind and kind of see the big picture. So hey, speaking of the big picture, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has just released a proposal to list the wolverine as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. Comments will be accepted up until May 6th of 2013 this year. Some points that you may want to consider is that you possibly want to encourage the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to list the wolverine as threatened as proposed. You may want to mention that some research has shown wolverines can be displaced by winter recreation, especially snowmobiles, though other research suggests that some recreation use can be tolerated. Generally speaking, wolverines do avoid roads when possible. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service hopefully will be encouraged by you to develop conservation measures that take these threats into account. If listed, wolverines will be protected from trapping. However, accidental trapping is a threat to wolverines. Now that wolf trapping is occurring in Idaho and Montana, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service maybe should consider developing conservation measures that eliminate the potential for accidental capture and killing in traps. And of course, any personal experience you have had with wolverines in the backcountry could be relayed. There's a whole bunch of information on this on the Friends of the Clearwater website, www.friendsoftheclearwater.org/USFWS-proposal-2-list-the-wolverine. And again, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is taking public comments up until May 6th to potentially list the wolverine as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. Now, as some of you may know, outside of Glacier National Park, the Clearwater Basin is the best and last stronghold for wolverines in the lower 48. Other news, the Army Corps of Engineers has released a draft environmental impact statement to address the continued accumulation of sediment in the Lower Snake River. The Corps has adopted Alternative 7 as their preferred alternative, which calls for more dredging of the river at the Clearwater and Snake confluence near the Port of Lewiston and Port of Clarkston. It's the Army Corps of Engineers Lower Snake River Programmatic Sediment Management Plan. Public comment deadline is March 26th. You can find more information on the front page of the FOC website, www.friendsoftheclearwater.org. www.friendsoftheclearwater.org. And then the Idaho Transportation Department has released a draft environmental impact statement for the realignment of US 95 between Thorn Creek Road and the southern city limits of Moscow. ITD has chosen E2 as their preferred alternative, which would take the highway along the base of Paradise Ridge before meeting up with the current roadbed near the city limits. Comment deadline is Saturday, February 23rd. The Paradise Ridge Defense Coalition, it says here, is up and running and is opposed to the E2 alternative. You can learn more about this group at paradise-ridge-defense.org. Again, www.paradise-ridge-defense.org. And so, as we said earlier today, no shortage of issues to be involved with here, and certainly we want to thank you for being active as you are, and thank you for our listeners today. We had a couple phone calls when we were doing music breaks. So, hey, you can catch us here on the Wild Clearwater Country Show every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m., and of course, none of this would be possible without KRFP Moscow, www.krfp.org, www.krfp.org. See how you can be involved and make a difference in your grassroots bottom-up community radio station. Quick weather report here. Tonight, mostly cloudy with low around 30. Tomorrow, slight chance of rain and snow. Mostly cloudy with a high near 42. Thursday night, mostly cloudy with low around 31. Friday, mostly cloudy with a high near 45. Friday night, partly cloudy with low around 32. Saturday, mostly cloudy with a high near 46. Saturday night, mostly cloudy with low around 32. Sunday, partly sunny with a high near 42. Sunday night, partly cloudy with low around 28. And then Monday, partly sunny with a high near 42. Again, thank you for listening to the Wild Clearwater Country Show, the one and only KRFP, Moscow.
Programming on KRFP is made possible in part by support from KRFP members and Hyperspud Sports, specializing in equipment for outdoor adventures. Hyperspud Sports is located at 402 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, call 208-883-1150 or visit hyperspud.com.
KRFP is also supported by
John's Alley Tavern, Moscow's home of live music. John's Alley is located at 114 East 6th Street in downtown Moscow.
Yo, this is the original Daddy Cool Squadron, KRFP Moscow. Yeah, let's go.
Welcome to Between the Lines, presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world. This week we present Brett Kaufman with the ACLU's National Security Project, who discusses his group's legal challenge to the Obama administration's use of drones in the targeted killing of American citizens. Carl J. Mayer, an attorney representing journalist Chris Hedges and six other plaintiffs, who talks about the latest court battle in their challenge to the government's power to indefinitely detain U.S. citizens linked with terrorism. And Marty Isaac, president of Connecticut Against Gun Violence Education Fund, who talks about the strengthening of firearms laws his group is advocating for in the Connecticut State Legislature in the wake of the Newtown School massacre. But first we begin with a summary of some of the week's underreported news stories.